did ask me to record this. Elliot Fuchs is the one who really put this together, who's not here. He's on the way out now, but I told him I'd record it and send it to him. So thank you to Elliot. Thank you to Ari, an old, I guess, Talmud. I had a zoch to have him in the YU for one semester when I was there in the business halacha. And thank you to all you for coming out and inviting me. And it's so beautiful what you're putting together here. I mean, I agree with what you just said about a transient community, but having a place while you're here to be kavua, to get to know each other and to learn. So all the things that you guys are doing are fantastic. So thank you so much for that. And now for tonight, I wasn't sure what to talk about. I recognize some faces. Some are new, some are old. The different styles of shirim. But since Elliot asked me to give the shirim, Elliot likes more chassidus, so we're going to learn some chassidus tonight. On the way here, left me a message. She said, you could do a little lumdus if you want at the same time, but we're going full chassidus tonight. That's okay. So I want to share with you some thoughts I had to machshava. Someone shared with me on Erev Shabbos. He sent a picture of a medrash plia, a medrash that requires a lot of understanding, a lot of explanation. And I figured I'd share the medrash and share some of my thoughts on this medrash. So the medrash says that shnaim shnaim ba'u el Noach, that two by two animals came to Noach. I know it's not that parsha yet, or was it quite some time until we get there again. But the medrash says, Elu hayamim, these are the days, shemashlimim behen es ha'halo. These are the days that we say a full halo, which of course doesn't make any sense. That's why it's a medrash pliya. What does Noach and the two by two animals coming to his teva have to do with saying halo? So the parish on the side quotes from Echida. And Echida says that shnaim shnaim, first we have to understand which days of the year we say a full halo. I'm reminded now, and when I was in YU, so I applied to the Kol Elyon. And the year I applied, so it's always fun to talk about the questions that Rav Schechter asks the different candidates. So the year I applied, someone was asked the following question. He was asked, which days of the year do we say a full hallel? So he started, in Eretz Yisrael there's 18, Chutz Lartz is 21. So he says, okay, full hallel. He was going Eretz Yisrael. He says, first day of Pesach. And 8 days of Sukkot Shmiat Seres, 8 days of Chanukah, that's 17. And he's thinking, this must be a trick question, Yom Ha'atzma'ut. And Rav Schechter says, no, you forgot Shavuos. That was the 18th one. So there's 18 in Eretz Yisrael, and there's 21 because there's 2 days Pesach, 2 days Shavuos, and then 8 days, or really 9 days Sukkot, and then 8 days of Chanukah. So the Chida says that Shnaim Shnaim in the Pasuk refer to the 2 days of Pesach, we say a full hallow. The second Shnaim is the 2 days of Shavuos. Ba'u is the Gematria 9, which are the 9 days of Sukkot, Shmiat Teres. And El Noach is the Gematria Chanukah, the 8 days of Chanukah. So there's some remez to Chanukah when it comes to Noach. Now Noach is connected to all the Yom Tovim apparently. But of course, we are an Erev Chanukah right now. Let's talk about how Noach connects to Chanukah. So these are some of my machshavas about Chanukah and Noach. We know that there's a discussion in the Gemara, when exactly did the Mabul take place? Which month? It seems that Rashi says that most of Farshim assume the Pasha Pshat is it started in Cheshvan into Kislev. This time of year is when the Mabul took place. Kislev, Cheshvan, and Kislev. And while the world, of course, is being destroyed, it was a very dark place at the time. There was a lot of choshech in the world. There was utter destruction. Noach was protected in the teva. He was inside the teva. He and his family were in the teva. Just like we are inside our own homes, and there's a dark world outside, a world full of darkness and gullus. And in that teva, he had a tzohar. He had a window or a light that illuminated for him and his family. And many times around us is a bitter world. You know, the zayas and olive is very bitter. Although the outside of a zayis is very bitter and the way it tastes as a food, when you squeeze it, extract the inside, you get shemen zayis, you get the olive oil. So the world around Noach was full of a bitter world, a dark world, a world of destruction. But inside was a light. It just so happens that the word teva, the Sfarim point out, is a gematria of zayis. Teva is a zayis. And Noach, who's inside, Noach Nun Ches stands for Ner Chanukah. So when Noach came out of the teva, he was the Ner Chanukah. He was a light that illuminated the world. And that's why Mar Cheshvan, which is a bitter month, leads to Kislev, which is a month of Or, Ner Chanukah. Now the Avnei Nezer writes that there are two mitzvahs of Chanukah, two avodas we have to work on Chanukah. One is with the Halakas Neros, the Re'iyah, the seeing of the Neros Chanukah, and the second element is the Hallel that we say, the Hallel Shalom that we say, the Dibur. There's a Re'iyah and there's a Dibur that takes place on Chanukah. And it says Avnei Nezer that these two mitzvahs, the Hallel and the Ner Chanukah, connect to what happened after the Mabul. Right after the Mabul, what happens? They get out of the Teva and the Maisa with Cham and Noach. What happens? It says the Avnei Nezer, he saw with his eyes a Re'iyah Ervas Aviv. He saw his father, the nakedness of his father. And then he told his brother Shem and Yefes. So Cham did two bad things. That which he saw and that which he said. And as a tikkun, says Avnei Nezer, so Shem and Yefes, they did not follow in the path of their brother Cham. Rather, they covered up their father. They didn't let anyone else talk about this. And it says in the pasuk, they didn't look at their father. They end the conversation, and the conversation's over, and they didn't look. They were mesaken both the dibur and the re'iyah of what their brother did. And says the Avnei Nezer, so shame, of course, we come from shame. Klal Yisrael comes from shame. And Yavon comes from Yefes. So Yavon had a certain kedusha. Because of that ma'isa, they had a certain kedusha that they protected their father's dignity. And that Yefes, that Yavon, that kedusha that was in their world for a long time, the Torah can only be translated in Yavonis, because there's a certain kedusha that Yavonim have. In the whole ma'isa of the Chashmonaim and Yavonim, when we conquered, we defeated the Yavonim, we took that kedusha of Yavon, we took the kedusha of Yefes, and we have this mitzvah now of Ner Chanukah, to see the Ner Chanukah, and of the Hallel to say Dibur. Dibur and Rear. That's what Avnei Nezer says, all from the story of Noach. So I want to talk about these two elements, Re'iyah and Dibur. Two different lessons, two different messages in serving a Kadosh Baruch. Let's first talk about Re'iyah. Seeing. What does it mean to see, to look? I'm not talking about, of course, this includes looking at that which is appropriate versus what is inappropriate. But also how to see people, how to see events, how to look at something, look at someone. So the B'nai Sascha points out that Yaakov Avinu's yard site was the first day of Sukkos. Avram was connected Pesach, Yitzhak is connected Shavuos, and Sukkos is connected Yaakov. Yaakov is connected Sukkos. His yard site is the first day of Sukkos, 15th of Tishrei. That's Yaakov Avinu's yard site. And the Psukim tell us that after Yaakov died, he was not buried on the day he died. The Mitzrayim mummified, or whatever they did to the body, for 70 days. 70 days. And 70 days from the 15th of Tishrei, do quick math, lands on the 25th of Kislev, which is the first day Chanukah. Meaning, Yaakov died on Sukkot, he was buried on Chanukah. His burial is the first day Chanukah, Chafei Kislev. Which, by the way, those who just in the Gemara and Shabbos, when it talks about Parei Achag, that the Chanukah candles are connected to the Parei Achag of Sukkot, that we count down according to Beis Shammai, 8 to 1, because the cows of Sukkot we would bring down karbanos from top to bottom, Parei Achag, there's a connection between Chanukah and Sukkot. There are 70 cows brought. 70 days between Chanukah and Sukkot. That's the connection, Yaakov Avinu. He died on Sukkot, he was buried on Chanukah. Now what happened? A well-known Maisa, the Gemara talks about what happened the day that Yaakov Avinu was buried. So there's a fight. Who showed up at the Levaya? His brother, his nice brother, Esav. Esav said, wait a second, this is my burial spot, not his. I have the rights to this, not Yaakov Avinu's. What's going on here? And the whole fight ensued. And then Choshen Medan, who was able, was not able to hear very well or at all, he inquired what was going on. And they said they had to go run back to get the shtar, that it was really his. And what did Choshen Ben Dam do? He killed Esav. He killed Esav. So Esav died when? Hanukkah. His yahrzeit, Esav's yahrzeit, is Sunday night. Chaf Hei Kislev. That was the yahrzeit of Esav. Now, Esav's whole body was not buried. There's a Gemara in Sota, and there's another Medrash. Either his head fell off and is buried in Maras Machpelah, or his eyes. So Esav died on Hanukkah, and either his head or eyes were buried in Maras Machpelah. That's what the Gemara says. So we have to ask a few questions. Firstly, what zuchus did Esav have to have any part of his body buried in Maras Machpelah? I mean, that's to be buried there, you have to be the Avos Imahos. Not just anybody gets buried there. So what zuchus did Esav have that he was buried in Maras Machpelah? Number two is, once he had a zuchus, why was it his eyes or head? Why that body part? And thirdly, why did this take place on Hanukkah? So Reb Tzadok explains that this was the zuchus of Esav. Esav had a great, 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 great grandchild. Gemara says that Rabbi Meir came from Neron HaKesar, one of the Caesars, who were from Bnei Edom, which comes from Esav. Esav's great, great, great grandchild was none other than Rabbi Meir. That's what the Gemara says. And that zuchus, that Rabbi Meir would come from Esav, was the zuchus that he had to be buried in Maras Machpelah. Now, Rabbi Tzadok gives a explanation as to why Esav's head was buried. That's another idea. We'll leave that aside for now. I want to suggest why Rabbi Meir's eyes were buried. Because again, there's a machlok, is what was buried. Was it his head or was it his eyes? So Rabbi Tzadok explains the head. I'm going to explain why his eyes were buried. Why were the eyes of Esav buried in Maras Machpelah? So Zuchus was Rabbi Meir. Who was Rabbi Meir? So Gemara tells us in Chagiga, Taf Tezayin Rebeis, that one time Rabbi Bar Shila was Ochet to Gila Eliyahu Navi. Eliyahu Navi showed up to him. He were talking. You have this in the Gemara a few places, that some Amor was Ochet to see Eliyahu Navi. And the question they ask, Eliyahu Navi, they ask, if you ever are Ochet to meet him, this is the question you should ask Eliyahu Navi. Because that's what the Amoram asked. What's a Kadosh Baruch Hu doing right now? That's the question that many Amoram asked Eliyahu Navi. So Eliyahu Navi says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is learning. That's what you guys do every morning, hopefully more than that as well. They're learning. HaKadosh Baruch Hu learns. The Gemara Avodah Zarah talks about that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a Seder, Hayom. And part of that Seder, he learns 3 hours a day. So he asks Eliyahu, what's Hashem doing? He says he's learning. And he's quoting all the great tzaddikim of the generations. All the great Amoraim, Tanaim, except for one he's not quoting. He's not quoting Rabbi Meir. He's not learning the Torahs of Rabbi Meir. Why not, he asks. Because Rabbi Meir's Rebbe was an Acher, Elisha ben Avuya, he was Treif. And if the Rebbe was Treif, then Rabbi Meir's Treif as well. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't quote Rabbi Meir's Shita. So Rabbi Bar Shila is a bit troubled by this. He says, well, wait a second. Rabbi Meir is not just Stam. Rabbi Meir had a unique ability to differentiate, to distinguish between that which is good and that which is bad. And this is the mashal that Rabbi Bar Shila said to Eliyahu Navi. He says Rabbi Meir had such a koach that if matzah rimon, he found the pomegranate, the zarek klipa, he threw out the peel, achal chai, he ate the chai. You take a pomegranate, you peel off the outside, you take away the white foam, whatever it is, and then you eat the seeds on the inside. Rabbi Meir was able to remove the klipa of any person and his Rebbe Acher and take the ochel, take the chai, eat the inside. That's what the Gemara says. Oh, from that point on, Eliyahu says, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is quoting Rabbi Meir. Now he's quoting his shittas. He's quoting the Torahs of Rabbi Meir. So the Arizal says, this mashal of the Rimon, if you go to that Gemara on Amud Aleph, Tezayin Amud Aleph, the Gemara says, with the four Rabbanim who went to Pardes, and something happened to each one, Rabbi Kiva was, nothing happened to him, but Acher was confused. Why was Acher confused? Any remember the story? Acher was confused because he was inside Pardes, and what happened was, he saw that there was a malach called the Metatron. You're not really supposed to say malachim's names, but there's a malach called Metatron. And he heard and he saw that Metatron was given the rights to give punishment. He was giving a din, Gemar din, the Metatron. So Acha thought there must be two gods in this world. I thought only Kadosh Baruch Hu gives a Gemar din. How could this other Malach must be the two gods? And he went off the Derech. That's what the Gemara says. So listen to this incredible Arizal. The Arizal says, we look at the way Metatron is spelled. Mem Yud, Tes Tes, Resh Vav Nun. If you remove the outer letters of Metatron, the Klipa, it's Rimon. The first letters are Mem and Yud, and the last letters are Resh Vav Nun. That's Rimon. You remove the Klipa of Rimon. And then the letters that are left are the Tes and Tes in the middle. That's Gematria 18 Chai. That's what it means that Matzah Rimon, Zarek Klipa, Achal Chai. That was a unique ability Rabbi Meir had. That he was able to dissect from his Rebbe Acher that which was Klipa and that which was Chai. That which was good, that which was bad. That was the Koach of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's name means to find the light of every single person. To find the goodness of every single person. Rabbi Meir's Yahrzeit, according to many, is Pesach Sheni. Why is it Pesach Sheni? Because Pesach Sheni is an opportunity for those who are Tamei, those who are Derech Rechoka, for another chance to bring Karban Pesach. Rabbi Meir was always looking to give people another chance and another chance to be Meir, to bring light into that person's world, to bring light into a person's Choshech. His view of life, his view of people was always to look for the Chai, to find the person's Chias, to find the person's goodness. And that's really the first lesson of Chanukah, the Re'iyah, the seeing of the candles. Now what this week, Chanukah is very special for many reasons, but my wife and I, we just celebrated our 20th anniversary this past week. Chaf Kislev is our anniversary, so Shad Brachos is dips into Chanukah. So I'll share with you how I proposed to her. 21 years ago, I guess. 20 and a half, whatever, August before we got married. So my wife knew already that we were getting, having a l'chaim of art on Monday. Because her parents built a big tent in the backyard. Now, I grew up in Teaneck here. My in-laws are, my wife is from Five Town. Not that they're fancy. But I was used to like a l'chaim is in someone's house, that's it. I don't like big scenes, I don't like public speaking, I don't want to go to a shul, I said just make it in the house. So after some discussion, they agreed to make it in the house. But the house meant, let's take down some trees in the backyard and make a big tent. That's not what I was expecting, but okay, this is what happens. So that, you couldn't hide the fact that Monday was a big party in their house, or outside her house. It was August, it was the hottest day ever. But that much I couldn't hide. So Sunday night, we went out for dinner. And she was expecting me to propose to her Sunday night, after dinner. I dropped her off at her house, and I didn't propose to her. And she was devastated. But this is not a Shalom Bayis year. But it's very good to incorporate in Shalom Bayis the element of surprise. And keep her on your toes. You want a surprise, a gift, a nice idea, a trip. Surprise is a very good element of Shalom Bayis. For another time, we can have a Shalom Bayis shmus. So I wanted to surprise her. So what was my plan? So back then before Amazon existed, they had something called eBay. I think it still exists. Maybe it's probably pretty much obsolete. But there's the eBay. So I went online and I bought glow-in-the-dark letters. And I told my sister-in-law, I asked my sister-in-law, younger sister-in-law, if she could, tape some glow-in-the-dark letters in my wife's room, right above her bed. And perfect, the moment she goes to sleep, that's it, turn the lights off, and she sees like a bright light of, will you marry me? That was the plan. Brilliant. Fine, so I drop her off, I drive down the block a few houses later and park, waiting for like a call, like screaming, or maybe I'll even hear the screaming from the house. So, some time passes and there's no phone call. 20 minutes, 30 minutes, I'm just sitting waiting in my car. So I call her on the phone, and I just start chatting with her. And you know, try, you know, convincing her to go to sleep. It's, you know, it's late. We're getting engaged tomorrow. You know, go turn your lights off. I can't. I'm so excited. I can't. I'm overwhelmed. I said, do me a favor. Just turn the lights off and just go to sleep. It's good for you. So she agreed. I'm waiting for the big scream. She turns the lights off, apparently. Nothing. My sister-in-law must have messed this one up. So then I said to her, so I don't know, I said, is your room dark? You know, I'm asking weird questions. Is it dark in the room? Is there light in the room? And she's like, it's pretty dark. I said, is there any light in your room at all? There's like a little reflection from the window to my ceiling. Oh, we're getting somewhere. Okay, good. My wife has very bad vision. So I said, are your glasses on? She's like, no, my glasses aren't on. I'm going to sleep. So I said, could you put your glasses on? So now we're really going to get it. She's like, you're really acting weird, she's thinking. Or maybe we shouldn't get engaged now. Like, so she puts on her glasses, and I'm waiting for the big scream and no scream. So now I say, you know, I said, is there anything like on your, like the, above your bed? Like I convince her to stand up on her bed while she's ready to go to sleep and to start feeling around and nothing there. I said, now turn the lights on and still nothing. And finally she sees there glowing dark letters on her ceiling, which says, will you marry me? Now what went wrong? No one told me. It wasn't part of the instructions, or I didn't read the instructions. You're supposed to put glow-in-the-dark letters in the freezer first for it to work. So it didn't work. But the whole lesson was to try to bring light. To bring a light into the room, into the darkness. That's Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir is always trying to be Meir, to bring light. Light into the darkness. You know, we our son, my fifth kid, my youngest son though, his name is Meir, Yisrael Meir. He was his bris was here in Teaneck, Hurricane Sandy. After Hurricane Sandy, lights out, mamish black, lights out. We had it in my parents' house on Shabbos, a Shabbos bris during Hurricane Sandy. My parents had a generator, so we had like a little light in the house. So he is Meir. He brings light into the world. That's the name Meir. To bring light in the darkness. When you look at a person, you look at a situation, it's always trying to find the positivity. In Shalom Bayis, you get into an argument with your wife, raising children, they misbehave. You always have to find the positivity. You always have to find the light. That's very Meir. That's one of the lessons of Neres Chanukah. The second one is Hallel. He said to speak the Dibur, to speak properly, to say praise. You know, there's another shmooze about Shalom Bayis, how important it is to compliment your wife. And there's ways how to properly compliment. But there's a Gemara that tells the Megillah that one of the seven Nevios was Chulda. And the Gemara of Megillah says at the end of the first parak that Yoshia Melech wanted some Nevuah for something. And he asked Chulda for some Nevuah. So Gemara asks, why would he ask Chulda? She lived in the time of Yirmiyah HaNavi. Yirmiyah was a far greater Navi than that of Chulda. If you have the option, certainly Yirmiyah would be your first choice. And Yoshia Melech had no problem being the Melech to get access to Yirmiyah. Asks Gemara, why did he ask Nevuah from Chulda over Yirmiyah? Where it says, Nashim Rachman Yosem. He was looking for a very compassionate type of prophecy. He wanted a little care, love. That's Pshat in the Gemara. Ask the Ber Maim Chaim. You could choose what type of Nevuah you have? A Navi is nothing short of just a conduit of a Kaddish Baruch who's sending a message to whoever the recipient is. The Navi doesn't decide what to say. The Kaddish Baruch Hu wants to send Yoshia Melech, he'll send him a message, regardless of if it's Yirmiyah, Yoshia, or it's a Chulda, or any other Navi. You're going to choose that's a better prophecy than his? It's all the same Nevuah that Kaddish Baruch Hu wants to send a message. It will be a message, the same message, regardless of who the conduit is. So what does Gemara mean that he was looking for Rachmanios because Nashim Rachmanios him? So Ber Maim Chaim says, he gives a mashal. You have a pipe and the water passing through the pipe. If that pipe is coated with sugar, that water at the other end will be H2O. But there's going to be a subtle sweetness. It's like seltzer. You can't like taste it so much, but there's a little flavoring of raspberry, whatever's in the seltzer. It's a little flavor there. Not as much as you want as a Pepsi or orange soda, but it's a little something there. And if that pipe is coated with something bitter or sour, whatever it's coated with, there's going to be a subtle flavor of something in that seltzer, in that water. So he says, yes, the words that that Hulda will say will perhaps be the same exact words that Yirmi will be saying. And the message will be the same, but there's going to be a subtle twist, a subtle flavor. Yirmi was a little bit bitter. Hulda was a little bit more compassionate. And you have this with your kids. You know, your kids could say, you have two kids who could both say thank you. And one kid could say thank you and with a smile and be genuine and really appreciate whatever you gave him or her. And another one could say the same exact words, thank you, but they could roll their eyes. When you speak, it's not simply what you say, but it's also how you say things. It's the inflection, it's the mannerisms, it's the facial expressions, the body. Everything goes into just words to flavor it. So yes, the same message could come across from Hulda and Yirmi, but how you say things with the love and the compassion, the sweetness, how you speak to your children. You have to learn how to discipline children properly, but how strong one should be, how soft one should be, how much love to show the children, even when you're disciplining them, and with your spouse and with friends and with co-workers, employees, employers. Now, I got a call last week. I have a rule that I typically don't answer phone calls. I don't know the number. If I don't know them, I won't answer the phone call. If they want me to leave a message, I'll call them back. Because I get all types of random phone calls, whether they're spam or whether they're people just talking for whatever. So for whatever reason, I got a phone call last week. I answered the phone, even though I didn't know the number. It's a young lady. And she says, are you a rabbi? Now, I was always taught to say, hi, my name is Yoni Levin. Can I speak to so-and-so? But she just says, are you a rabbi? I said, oh, who's calling? Does it make a difference, my name, if you're a rabbi or not? I said, excuse me? I said, oh, you're so nasty. I just wanted to ask a question and you hung up the phone on me. I was very taken by that. Did I do something wrong? Like, was that not nice? I asked her name? But there's a certain way to talk. There's a certain decency, courtesy, how to call someone on the phone, how to talk nicely to a person. So that's the second message of Chanukah, of how to speak properly with a proper dibur. Now, there's a great ma'isa, Rav Yashiv, he was once accused for having a job, for working for the Israeli government. He was a dayan on the Beis Din, and I'm not getting into a political discussion, but people felt that was somehow an expression of Rav Yashiv showing support for the state of Israel, whether it is or it isn't, whether it makes a difference or not, not for now, obviously. But there were certain Haredim who were very against Rav Yashiv for taking a job on the Beis Din. And one day he was walking home from work, and a person in his neighborhood decided to throw eggs at Rav Yashiv. Three eggs at Rav Yashiv. So Rav Yashiv is walking home, and the guy throws three eggs at him. And Rav Yashiv stops in his tracks. He obviously knew everything in Halacha. He knew he was a Talmid Chacham. And he knew a Talmid Chacham should not walk with any stains. So he stopped in his tracks. He takes out his handkerchief and slowly starts cleaning the eggs, the shells, the yolk off his coat. Now this man who threw the egg at Rav Yashiv stood there watching Rav Yashiv in the shame of dripping with eggs. Now there are a few ways a person can respond to being egged. The worst response, and I hope no one here would take this approach, would be to beat the guy up. Right. So I think we would agree that's probably the worst approach. And not saying it's not justified, but I would hope no one would take that approach. Rav Yashiv certainly did not take that approach. The next approach would be just, which what I probably would do, just ignore the guy and be silent. If you did that, that'd be very praised. The next step, what a person might do, if you thought of this, then you're very special, to give the guy a bracha. Now, if I stop the story there, that itself is godless. Rav Yashiv gave the guy a bracha. But now, if I tell you what the bracha was and how the bracha was mekuyam, that's godless shibah godless. So Rav Yashiv gave the guy a bracha. Now, he understood, if the guy in the middle of the day is busy throwing eggs at an old rabbi, He obviously doesn't have much to do in his life. So he says to the guy, I give you a bracha that you should be too busy to ever do this ever again. That was the bracha. Beautiful bracha. That, now, we could stop there. That's a great also. That's a great maaser right there. Now, what Rav Yashiv didn't know, or maybe he did know, but seemingly he didn't know that this man had been married for many years without any children. And the next year, this man's wife had triplets. Three eggs, three children, and boy was his life busy from that point on. But that's what it means to use your dibur, your speech, with positivity. To take every moment in life, every situation, every person, to look at every person with love and care, and to speak to every single person with love and care. And how does a person get this level? I'll finish off with just with this. That for, of course, it all comes from the Torah. The learning that you guys do every single morning, waking up early, it all comes from the learning. That's how you have the perspective of looking at every single person and speaking to every single person with love and care. They talk about the organas of Hanukkah, the hidden light. You know what the organas is? It's not Kabbalah. It's not Hasidus. You know what the B'nai Sascha writes? You know what the organas is? It's Torah Shebaal Peh. We light 36 candles throughout Hanukkah. 1 + 2 + 3. That's a total of 36 candles. There are 36 Masechtas and Shas. That's what the organas is. The organas is learning Torah Shebaal Peh. Mastering Shas. That's what it is. The month Kislev, Chaf Samech, Lamed Vav, is the kisui, the cover of the Lamed Vav. There's a hidden secret in the Gemara, in Shas, that Hanukkah is trying to show us. And that's where you find the light of Rabbi Meir. I told you Rabbi Tzadok had another shot to Rabbi Meir, why he was buried, why Esav's head was buried. I explained the eyes, but the head, because Rabbi Meir was the Rosh of Torah Shebaal Peh. Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. That's what Rabbi Tzadok says, why Esav's head was buried, because that Rosh was for Rabbi Meir. That's how you get to the levels of finding the Organas. The Organas is the Gemara. It's mastering Shas. That's how you get to a level of seeing every single person with incredible love and speaking to every single person with incredible love. So just as I was leaving shul tonight, someone shared a beautiful idea from the Divrei Yosef, of Yosef Klein, I think it said. And Machlok is based Hillel by Shammai about whether or not we count or light from 8 to 1 or 1 to 8. And his explanation was as follows, that they have a machlokas, which is the Iker Neis? Was it the Mechama or was it the Neis Shemen? The Mechama was a Neis, physical victory, a physical Neis, a miracle celebrating the physical, the Gashmias. And the Neis Shemen was a spiritual miracle. So Beis Shammai, this was his Chiddush, the Divrei Yosef, was embracing the position that it was the Gashmias, it was the Mechama. And anything in Gashmias, it starts very exciting. You got very excited when the pizza got here and the sushi. And by the time you're finished, you don't care much. It goes down. Gashmias goes from 8 down to 1. It was good for the beginning when you smelled it, when you tasted it, it was delicious. Now you're full. You go back home feeling heavy. It's 8 to 1. That's the Gashmias. But the Divrei Yosef says when it comes to Ruchnias, you start off, it's hard. It's hard when you start off. To wake up early in the morning, it's hard. But as you continue to plug away and you push yourself and you wake up and you fight that alarm, it goes from 1 to 8. The Ruchnias grows. When you want to sit over a piece of Gemara, a daf of Gemara, you want to sit over some lumdis, you want to learn over some Shulchan Aruch, you want to learn the Halacha, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, that the Ruchnias grows, gets bigger from 1 to 8. That's Beis Hillel, 1 to 8. It grows. And that's the celebration of Hanukkah, mastering the Lamed Vav, the 36 Masechtas of Shas. So I finish off with the Maisa. Maisa, also with Rav Yashiv and Rav Chaim as well, about mastering Shas. Rav Yashiv was once making a seam, I think it was above Metzia, and he was explaining a question that many of the Mefarshim wonder why Rav Papa was Zocha, that his 10 sons are mentioned after every single seam. Mami Rav Papa, Rachma Rav Papa, and so on. 10 sons of Rav Papa. What in the world are we doing saying Rav Papa's 10 sons at the end of every single seam? So there are different explanations. This was the Chiddush of Rav Yashiv. And I think I saw it elsewhere too. But I heard the Maaser of Rav Yashiv made this suggestion. The 10 places in Shas where there's a machlokas. And Rav Papa says they're both right. Elu ve'elu divakim chaim. For example, there's a machlokas in Gemara Tainus. What bracha to say after a long drought? It doesn't rain, and then it rains. You say this bracha, you say that bracha. Rav Papa says say them all together, all the brachas. There are 10 places in Shas. Rav Papa does this. He's machriya the din. Because when it comes to learning, learning isn't only about learning, getting closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's also about bringing everyone together in a chabura, bringing shalom to everyone. The 10 plays where Papa does this, so he's zoche that his 10 sons are mentioned after every single siyum. So a person who heard this nice idea was at the siyum. I want to know the 10 places. So he goes on, I don't know, Google, Barilan, Otar Chachma, wherever, whatever search engine. He looks for Papa's name, which comes up many times in Shas, but he went through and he found 9 times only that Papa had done this. He searched again, searched again. Rav Yashar made a mistake. And Rav Yashar at that time was older, harder to get into, and Rav Chaim at the time was easier to get into, Rav Chaim, his son-in-law. So the man goes to Rav Chaim and says, your shver had a very nice idea, but he was wrong. Rav Chaim laughed in his face. He says, you think the computer's smarter than my shver? Open up the Gemara brachos daf yud af from the base. Machlokas, what bracha to say, birchas haTorah, lasak b'dvei sara, v'harivna, asher bracha banu, Rav Hamnuna amru, amar, Nimru, cool, say all of them. Says the Gilead of Shas on the side. It's supposed to be Rav Papa there. That's the 10th place. Computer didn't pick it up. That's what it means to master Shas. That's what it means to bring light into the world. That's what it means to wake up early in the morning to steig. So, Mirtz Hashem, this Hanukkah should be a yontif of incredible or, the or of Torah, the light of the Tzor of the Teva, the Ner Hanukkah of Noach, Mishbizocha. To bring the Or of Mashiach with the Gula Shema Ba'amitas, v'her v'yamein, v'yamein, v'yamein. Amen. Amen.